Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Here he is, our new Prime Minister.
Her Majesty the Queen has asked me to form a new government, and I have accepted.
Tonight, a new product launch. The last time there was this much fuss over a tablet, well, it was a long time ago. Today, Apple came out with its new half-inch thick electronic tablet, a kind of giant iPod Touch called the iPad.
It's being called a catastrophe of major proportions. The Caribbean island nation of Haiti has been rocked by its biggest earthquake in more than 200 years. The 7.0 quake hit just south of the capital, Port-au-Prince, and was followed by 24 strong aftershocks.
South Africa is about to host the greatest show on earth. But can the Football World Cup meet the expectations of a country gripped by crippling inequality?
Saint-Saëns has been beaten by the shot from distance. What a strike from Kasuki Honda. That's probably the best free kick we've seen in the FIFA World Cup of 2010. Can Lightning strike twice in Rustenburg? Sorensen must be concerned. How about that? Yasuhito Endo this time.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Greatest Games podcast on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. My name is Marcus Speller. Opposite me, of course, is Jonathan Wilson. And today on the pod, we have Shinobu Yamanaka, the football writer from Japan, of course. Shin, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Not at all. We go back to the World Cup in 2010, the Group E first round game, which ended Denmark 1, Japan 3. Shin, why have you gone for this game?
Obviously, it's purely from the Japanese perspective. So it wasn't really a greatest game or in the most exciting game. But for me, the reason was it's actually twofold. Mm-hmm. First of all, I think it was the first proper win in the World Cup as a non-host nation.
Yes.
And against, at least for us, more than a decent side. Yeah. And that performance and also the 3-1 win as a result sort of showed, at least to me, that our defensive organization could do the job at that level. Yeah. As opposed to the frantic, you know, do or die defending for 90 minutes, which went on and on for the previous tournaments.
Yeah.
But this was more measured and controlled defending. Mm. And also teams showed that more attacking intent whenever they had a ball. So in a way that the performance showed that we are now ready to move on to the next step, which is to focus more on the, what we are really good at, mm-hmm. which is like a pass and move sort of football based on the assured technique. Yeah. So that was the first thing. And secondly, it was totally unexpected. Yeah, because before we went into the tournament, the expectation from the nation was nothing, zilch. Yeah, and the team was led by the unpopular manager. And those, especially after we lost all the four preparation games, the international friendlies before the tournament. Yeah. And So there's no expectations. And at the first game, even before the first ball for us was kicked in the first game against Cameroon, I even thought personally had a bad omen, because when I arrived at the stadium, I look at the stands, and there was a banner displayed by the Japanese supporters, and obviously it's written in Japanese. But if I translate it in English, it meant something like, nothing is impossible. But it was partially covered by a smaller flag. It read, nothing is possible. So I was like, oh, great, what a way to start the tournament. Yeah. But in the end, after the Denmark game, we scored 3 against Denmark and 6 points in the back and went through the knockout stage. So it was total surprise. And during that 3-game period, especially during this Denmark game, Keisuke Honda emerged as our new talisman for Japan football. So those are two reasons.
Very good reasons indeed. Japan obviously co-hosted in 2002 with South Korea. And often the host nation is treated slightly differently. Well, I mean, in the terms of South Korea, definitely, but I didn't mean that. But as in the viewing public who are not aware. So say take the US in 94, for example, even though they got to the second round, perhaps didn't find their feet at the World Cup, probably until 2002.
Well, I mean, it's just it's a totally different situation, partly because you get an easier draw because you're seeded, and partly because you have all the advantages of playing at home. You have a home crowd, you know the environment, you know the climate. So, I mean, Japan's first World Cup had been 98.
Yeah.
Because I remember reading a piece by you in the Blizzard talking about...
Three
defeats, but the goal, the first goal was scored, and what a big moment even that was.
Oh, yeah, It was scored by Masashi Nakayama, and who is 1 year younger, and we went to the same high school, so that was my proud moment.
And you were watching that in a pub in London?
In a pub in London, central London, because at that time I was working for a company, and I was doing the Japanese salaryman bit, so I was off and I was watching the game, and surrounded by English people and few Jamaican people, and I think I was the only one who stood up and shouted when the Nakayama scored a goal. And it was more like a consolation goal late in the second half, but it was a big goal for us.
But these moments, though, they're very important in the countries.
The first tournament I covered was the Asian Cup in 2000.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know how, whether this game is seen as being huge in Japanese history, but certainly my perception as a total outsider. The first group game, Japan played Saudi Arabia, who were sort of the great Asian power at the time.
Yeah.
And they absolutely destroyed them. Mm. And it was an amazing night. It was in Saida, in Lebanon. And it was sort of, the stadium had sort of three low sides, and then the main side was quite high, and the press box was right up the top of this sort of three-tier, maybe two-tier stadium. So you could see right across, and the sea was right just behind us. And to the right was this old Crusader fort. But you could hear the sea all the way through the game.
It sounds quite the setting.
Looking straight across, you could see the hills that form the Bekaa Valley, which is sort of goes into the border with Jordan, whatever that border is, and Syria further to the north. And that's kind of a great wine region of Lebanon. And the north end is I think, still controlled by Hezbollah, where the huge temple of Jupiter is, which I went to visit. And, but anyway, there's a...
I'm welling up here. This is incredible.
There was a fun fair. And so you had a Ferris wheel and the helter-skelter and everything.
Bring us back down to earth.
And it was early evening and the sun set and the sky was sort of this incredible pinkish purple. And then there's a thunderstorm. And he had this sort of this incredible coloured sky of flashes of lightning above this sort of silhouette of a fairground. And on the pitch in front of that, Japan, I think 4-1 it finished against Saudi Arabia, but I've got a suspicion they were 4-0 up after about an hour or something. And this sort of, it felt like this seismic moment of, there's only one team who actually, it's really obviously the best team in Asia are. And of course they went on to win that tournament under Philippe Trussier.
It was an awakening of Japan.
My point I'm making is, I mean, I was at this game in Rustenburg as well. But this for me was sort of the end of sort of a 12-year period of me sort of waiting for Japan to arrive And here they are really arriving.
So it was your first tournament that you covered that? Because it's quite incredible that it was the awakening of Japan as an international side and the awakening of Jonathan Wilson, the man, really, the career. So, yeah, two incredible reasons why we all remember that tournament fondly, of course. But Japan, they'd obviously hosted in 2002, as we mentioned. In 2006, they'd picked up just 1 point and finished bottom of their group.
Yeah, that was quite a shock for us.
Was that a bit of a come-down? Because they'd reached the knockouts in 2002... and had gone out, maybe a touch disappointed, but perhaps, you know, it was perhaps there was the excitement of hosting the tournament. So again, that could be seen as a bit of a blur.
Of bubble burst. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, was it overshadowed in a sense because South Korea did so well?
Not really, because I think out of most of the Japanese people, I think we are more feeling down to it because we had a good expectation for that team because we thought that the team leading went into the Germany was certainly at the moment the strongest squad ever for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite established.
And there's an element of expectation.
Yeah. But we also had the feeling that there could be a tough reality because at 2002, you know, even though, even without the home advantage, the teams we played against was like Belgium, which is before the current golden generation, and clubs like
Russia, Tunisia,
yeah, and
which is what's the point I'm making about getting an easy draw because you see this?
Because in 06, they were in with, what, Brazil and Croatia?
Yeah.
It was in that group, I believe.
Yeah, Croatia and Australia first game. Yeah, and we lost because Tim Cahill scored the two goals.
Oh, that's right. Australia blitzed them towards the end. Yeah. Although Japan did hold the lead. I think they held the lead against Brazil. So they had a little
moment. We ended up losing 4-1.
Indeed, yeah. But of course, they ultimately disappointed in 2006, because, finishing bottom of the group with just 1 point.
Because I still have the newspaper clipping from the Germany tournament. Mm. I think it was a clipping from the Daily Mail and reporting the Croatian game, which was the second game in the group, ended up 0-0. And there was a great picture of the Yoshi Kawaguchi, our then goalkeeper, who used to be a pumpy goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And he made a great save, diving to his left and stopped the Croatian penalty. And it was a great shot, great picture as well. But that was the only positive thing came out from that game. And the headline for the report says, Zico, he was at the time our national team manager.
Yeah.
He'll be the first Brazilian to go home.
Oh, right.
So that was the kind of tournament for us. So it's all disappointing.
Yeah. So in 2010 then, going into that tournament, I mean, was there, you said there was sort of zero expectation. I mean, the Netherlands had beaten, as we expected. Well, they beat Denmark 2-0. They'd beaten Japan 1-0. And Denmark had beaten Cameroon 2-1. But crucially, because of that, they'd only been beaten 1-0 against the Netherlands, of course.
Japan had beaten
Cameroon 3-1. Goal difference was on their side. I mean, the Cameroon game, winning 3-1. I mean, oddly, not a bad Cameroonian side, even though they finished bottom of that group. You know, Eto'o was in there and one or two others. Yeah. But was that surprising that Cameroon, Japan beat Cameroon?
It was also a surprise and more like an upset, you know, even in the tournament. Yeah, because
to score three goals, I mean, for crying out loud.
No, it's 1-0.
I'm jumping ahead. To win a game, as you say, at the World Cup has been quite rare for Japan. So that must have provided a bit of excitement.
Yeah, but it was also kind of a lucky win because it was 1-0, as you pointed out, and also it's mostly thanks to our defending, you know, just make sure we don't concede, you know, just not to lose. And one of the very limited chances Honda scored, so that was 1-0. So in a way that it wasn't really expected, but we could see if we managed to, you know, keep the score as low as possible for a longer period, then we can sneak the, we can nick the 1 point or maybe even 3 points. So, but even though it was same win, but the Denmark game was different. Because in this first game, we went to the defensive mind. But the third game, we are ahead of the second spot race with the goal difference. But this game, the third game in Denmark, actually, we went in with the attacking intent. Yeah. We used a 4-2-3-1 for the first time in the tournament, even though it didn't work out.
But when looking at that Group E, Jonathan, when you see Netherlands, Denmark, Cameroon and Japan, going into that, did you even think Japan could get out of that group?
I did, because I'd seen Cameroon in Egypt.
Oh, I see.
And that was nothing like as good a side. And look, I mean, you look back at the players in there, and there's people like Alex Song and Eto'o, as you say, and
when I say it's a decent side, there's names in there.
Jeremy, but Paul Le Guin and that score did not get on.
Safe to say.
So, you know, you always, like, you know, Cameroon in 1990 was a shambles. The build-up, everything went wrong.
Yep.
It ended up essentially the players, you know, running it, not Nepomniachtchi, the coach, who'd been imposed at the last minute. So you sort of think with Cameroon, yeah, who knows? They've got the quality there, but I thought, as it turned out, it would be between Japan and Denmark as to who went through in second. Mm-hmm. I thought Denmark probably would, but I did think Japan had a chance.
But it wasn't a terrible Denmark side.
No, not at all. No, I mean, Sørensen in goal, Daniel Agger, Jondal Thomas and Dennis Romadell.
Very young Christian Eriksen.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he
came off the bench, yeah.
Uh-huh. He was about 18, I think, at the time or something like that. So there's certainly a few names in there. But going into that match, they'd beaten Cameroon, of course, but really, did Japan, was it the European side would have been seen as more of a scalp, perhaps?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Also, yeah. And also, as you just pointed out, the names, player names, it's quite played a big part psychologically towards mm-hmm. Japanese. Because if you look at the Danish starting 11 and on paper, and if you're thinking about them in the club level, they don't really, you know, instill fear into them. But when it comes to the international game and having them as an opponent for Japan, you know, all of a sudden you see, you know, if you think about the Bentner as an Arsenal player, we think, oh, we can deal with him. And Sørensen in goal for Stoke. And even just before the 2 months before this Denmark game, I was at the Stamford Bridge and Chelsea put the 7 goals into Stoke.
Mm.
Yeah, and even though Sørensen was only involved in the first 2 goals because he was stretchered off in the first half. But, you know, nobody is, you know, screams out that, you know, we're unbeatable or anything. But when it comes to the against them for a Japan game, we think, oh yeah, Bentner, big, Sørensen, huge.
Mm.
And all the players and the club names, Juventus, Liverpool, Ajax.
Those names jump out a little bit more, don't they?
Well, and also with Denmark, you sort of know what you're going to get. Yeah? Yeah. I mean, especially with Morten Olsen as coach, you know they're going to be very solid.
Yeah, solid.
You know they're not going to give you anything.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, if you're not, any slip you make, they will have a capacity to punish you. It's not going to be, they might not be brilliant names, they might not be going to play off a park, but equally you'll get nothing easy out of them.
They don't always qualify, but I believe the stat was that up until that tournament, whenever they had qualified, they'd always got through their group.
Yeah. Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so you know, relatively speaking, population size taken into account, blah, 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 they actually had a little bit of
pedigree. I think that point of population size is a huge one. I think they massively, certainly since sort of 84, they massively have overperformed.
Yeah, indeed. All right, let's have a quick break, and after which we'll talk about the actual 90 minutes.
And Sørensen! Oh, my goodness me! He's having a bit of a horror night, isn't he?
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
We could call it Pete and Mark's Colossal Tassel.
But we didn't. We called it Wrestle Me. Wrestle Me, Mark.
Wrestle Me, Peter.
A celebration of all things WrestleMania and beyond. And you may be thinking, I'm not really into wrestling. Well, don't worry. There's something for everyone. To be honest, it's mainly about stuff like this.
So hang on. Easy Lover was the original theme on WrestleMania.
It was. Someone heard it on the radio and went, that sums up everything about WrestleMania to me.
And this. You can really see the old back acne on test.
Yeah.
And this.
Is it worth reminding people of what earthquake John Tenta looked like at 23 years old?
Yeah, I think so.
And this.
For the record, Marty has made it very clear, and I agree and believe him, that he has never, A, had sex with his daughter, or B, wanted to have sex with his daughter.
And the people behind the face paint doing the most unique job in the entire world. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. That's Wrestle Me.
Wrestle Me, Mark.
Wrestle Me, Pete.
Japan throwing everything into another attack. The ball in is good. Oh, the brilliant dribble is good. The pushback is good. It's a goal for Japan, which takes them into the last 16. It's from the left foot of Okazaki.
Welcome back to the Greatest Games podcast on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard. So then, they face off, of course, in that match. And Japan and Denmark. Japan, as I say, they only needed a draw,
yeah.
But they started pretty much on the front foot, didn't they?
Yeah, from the start, we tried to move the ball quite quickly, and so showing their attacking intent. And even before the the Honda's opening free kick, we had two good chances around the 13th minute or something. So two good chances. So, and for those chances, that the players who actually shot, one was saved, one was, I think, off target.
Yeah.
But they were two midfielders. So that means that the midfielders from second row, they go beyond our central striker, which was Honda at the time.
They're bringing bodies forward.
Yeah, so that was quite...
Were you saying before that there was a tactical change for this game?
We started 4-2-3-1.
Right, but it's the same 11 that have played, same players who played.
Yeah, but for the first two games, it was 4-1-4-1.
Okay.
Yeah, and the midfielder is actually more like a three centre. Yeah, like Abe holding as an anchor man.
Okay, so what, Hasebe dropped deeper?
Hasebe and Endo, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, 4-2-3-1 was... I mean, as Euro 2008 was really where that sort of
came
in.
Yeah, but
2010, everyone seemed to be doing
that. Yeah.
You know, packing that sort of midfield, I suppose, or putting that extra player in there.
Well, 4-2-3-1, I think, you can see its evolution from around about, Euro 2000, these teams started to do it. Mm-hmm. By 2010, it's almost become slightly old-fashioned.
Yeah.
But it allows you to get dribblers back into the game without losing solidity. Mm-hmm. That's why I think it's a really useful formation. That's why it's sort of it's a good default to have.
Yeah.
And international football, when coaches don't have as much time to work with teams, it's an easy thing for players to understand. But I have to say I hadn't appreciated that Japan had changed shape in this game. I just sort of knew the players were the same players.
Yeah, the 4-2-3-1 only lasted probably less than 20 minutes.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And that was mainly because that we couldn't catch Thomason, because he was popping up and everywhere, and he was free too often to our liking. So. After the Honda's first goal, I think it was Abe who the manager was calling to the sideline and telling him to make sure that they change into the 4-1-4-1.
Okay, right. So went back to the shape they've been playing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Am I right in saying that two Japanese players got booked in the first half an hour for time wasting?
Really? Oh, I didn't remember.
That's what I read in the match report.
Right.
I'm pretty sure there was something which seemed at odds with the way the game flew, which is why I'm doubting myself when I said
that. Well, Endo and Nagatomo were both booked. End after 12 minutes, Nagatomo after 26 minutes.
Yeah,
but
so...
Maybe partially because we were quite aggressive up front. I mean, we can't really say that we made high line, but we tried to press them from the front, because that, in a way we forced them to play long. Yeah, because this tournament...
But Denmark don't mind that.
Yeah. So the people say that we played in their hand, but we also think that at this tournament... We realized that we had a good enough centre back pairing, so the players knew that they could more than compete in there as well. Mm. So the
two centre backs are what, Nakazawa and Tanaka, or Tulio Tanaka,
naturalized Brazilian. So they were good. I mean, they are shorter than Maya Yoshida, at Southampton, but they were solid enough. Yeah. So the players around them, they can focus on make sure they get to the second ball. So then we went attack. So that was their mentality. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the first goal that arrives on 17 minutes. I mean, in the 42 previous games at this tournament, we'd seen one free kick scored. with that Jabulani ball, which was quite controversial football.
It was a terrible, terrible football made for terrible, terrible tournaments.
However, the Japanese were a step ahead.
Well, they were, because it had been used in the J-League.
Which is a smart move.
Yeah.
Not that Honda played in the J-League.
Well, sure.
Yeah, that's true. But
it was a smart move from the Japanese, I suppose, to do that. Because it's strange that a football was so controversial, but this was...
Well, I mean, we'd seen at the Cup of Nations earlier that year that it was a terrible football.
It moved around too much.
But it's players just didn't know... It wasn't like a normal ball, but players didn't know how to control it.
Mm. It's an extraordinary thing.
Well, it's the problem of modern football, that marketing hype takes over everything. So, we're going to make a new ball for the tournament. Yeah, well, why don't you just use a ball that we know works?
Yeah.
And if you want to put a different design on it, fine. But, I think free kicks are an easy kind of rule of thumb to kind of know how good or how controllable a ball is. Mm-hmm. And, as you say, there've been one previous free kick in this tournament.
In the 42
I think I'm right in saying there'd been three free kicks scored in the whole of the Cup of Nations.
Right.
And it was in Angola. Angola, the circumstances were very, very difficult. The tournament really was a horrendous tournament for all kinds of reasons. Mm-hmm. And so I think we hadn't quite been awake enough to how bad the ball was.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just free kicks. It was, you'd see players trying to hit a sort of 40-yard pass and they'd catch it wrong and it'd go all over the place. Yeah. And then, of course, the counterexample of this is Maradona managing Argentina, wandering on the pitch, smoking a cigar, wearing these tiny little shiny leather shoes, smashing a ball first time at the top corner. I don't know what the problem is like.
Yeah. Do what I do. On the pitch, not off the pitch. So Honda steps up to take the free
kick. And he's 35 yards out. It's 40 yards out. It's miles out.
He's no right to score from there and smashes it. It's quite Cristiano Ronaldo-esque, I suppose, we would say now, with the stance and the technique. Mm. And Sorensen will be disappointed that a free kick has gone in from that far out at that angle. But then when you think about the ball, is he that much to play?
He takes a slight hop to his left, which means he can't then get across. Because that's the thing with the free kick. It essentially goes dead straight.
Yeah.
And if you look at the slow motion, look at the ball, it's not spinning at all. No. It's just sort of wobbling in the air. Yeah. And it does go up and down a bit. But it doesn't go laterally. Mm. So if Sorensen stayed where he was, he'd stepped across to his right and saved it quite easily. But I think the ball had gotten keeper's heads.
Yeah, definitely.
And so, I mean, you've got to give Honda credit for, I think, that side foot technique. I think he was deliberately just thinking, if I get this on target, there's a chance the ball will do something weird. Yeah. And I know the goalkeepers are sort of worried by this.
Yeah.
And I think Sorensen tried to second guess where he was going to go and then couldn't get across to it.
And even though that he was reacted a bit late, but he still went to catch it with both hands. And that was another reason why that it went in. Because if he tried to with his right arm or something, he might have.
Yeah, absolutely.
So a rare free kick scored at the tournament. And then, of course, 13 minutes later, we had another one to put Japan 2-0 up. Yeah, Endo. And this was a lovely free kick.
Yeah.
I don't think there's too many complaints.
No, it's a more traditional.
Traditional is the word. Yeah.
Whatever the ball is.
I don't think whether that would have been a tango or a brazooka, if you will.
The only thing I'd say about it is, I mean, because it's so close in, you don't have to strike with any power.
No.
And that, I think, he's just a little clip around the right side of the wall. It's beautifully placed.
Especially when it's so central as well,
but once you take power out of the equation, maybe the ball is a little bit more controllable.
Mm. Yeah, quite possibly.
But it's a beautiful free kick.
Yeah, but then again, it also, I think for Denmark, I think that the first Honda's free kick played in their mind, because at the Sorensen's position, also the wall in front of him, were more than slightly towards to the left. So from Endo's point of view, just ahead of D, I think he could see the goal, quite a big gap between the post and the goalkeeper. So that's where he went.
Okay, now that's interesting. I mean, Sorensen definitely, because he then makes a terrible mistake later on. That he sort of ends up flapping a ball onto the bar or the post. And his mind is gone completely. He's lost all confidence. So, that makes complete sense.
Because Endo and Honda both at the ball. So up until the minute that Endo actually took it, I think that they were thinking Honda's going to have another.
Yeah, okay. No, that makes... Yeah, that does make complete sense, yeah.
But it was odd. I remember watching that game thinking two free kicks. You know, it was more than, as I say, in the 40 games previously.
That's Japan.
Well, absolutely.
Preparation paid off.
Yeah. Welcome back next time. You know, this is going to happen.
But Endo is... I mean, he's a great dead ball specialist. He's like our Jorginho. You know,
well, of course, the aforementioned he played for Celtic,
Nakamura.
Yeah, I mean, he was
great. He was great.
Yeah. So they've had a few.
Yeah.
2-0. And I mean, Denmark looked stunned. Did they not? My recollection, and certainly watching back the highlights, they looked stunned. I mean, obviously Sorensen, as you've mentioned there, but Japan were playing with so much confidence.
Yeah, yeah.
And Denmark looked shell shocked.
Well, I think the other thing was Simon Kjær had been a really big part of that defence, and he was suspended, so Krolder came in. So you know, they didn't have that basis they were used to. So I think a combination of things have kind of, you know, a goalkeeper who's sort of lost it, the centre back. Pairing isn't the same, and Japan playing, I think, probably much better than they'd expected.
Yeah, you must have been enjoying yourself though, Shin, in that bar.
Can't say I really enjoyed it at the time. I thought I really enjoyed it.
It was pretty hard to enjoy
the
anything
half
in Rustenburg.
45 minutes is really, really long.
It was really cold as well.
Oh yeah, it was. Yeah. During the daytime, it was sunny, quite nice.
Yeah,
but
the night it got really cold.
Yeah,
it was
really cold. Strange for a World Cup, but
yeah, and that the coldness that the Denmark players, they came out really early, just before the second half, and I remember seeing. Bentner, he was just doing sprints with the coach, and I was watching him. I was like, "What are you, sub?" He started the game, but they were really upright for the second half.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're putting the long balls in.
Indeed, but I mean, they didn't really do that much, really. I mean, you mentioned Sorensen, who was struggling. You know, there was a free kick, which I'm guessing was a cross, because to shoot from that far out would be a.
It was his endo again, wasn't it?
Yeah, but he flights one in, and Sorensen sort of fluffs it.
Yeah, it's overhit massively and
fluffs it behind him onto the post, you know, so they got away with that one there. I suppose three free kicks in one game might have been a bit too much, even for the 2010 World Cup. But yes, I mean, Denmark really never looked likely.
Well, Søren Larsen hits the bar with that volley.
Yeah, okay, he does, but. It's a great effort, a little bit speculative, but it's not a chance that's been carved out.
Yes, no, that's true. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, if you concede that, yeah, all right, one of those things. It's,
yeah. Indeed. I mean, roughly 10 minutes towards the end, they were awarded a penalty when Daniel Agger was fouled. And John Dahl Thomason took the kick and the goalkeeper saved it. And then he scored the rebound, which it wasn't the most convincing finishes from the rebound, but there it was. And then Japan sealed it. On the 87th minute, of course.
Yeah, and that's a beautiful goal.
It's a lovely... I mean, that's where Honda looks... I mean, in that moment, Honda looked like one of the best players in the tournament. You know, the way he kind of skipped past the defender with ease.
Yeah. And Okazaki topped in.
Well,
it was a beautiful top in from
But it was a lovely... But Honda made that such a lovely goal.
Yeah, it's returned past... It's Ramadol, weirdly. I don't know why he's so deep. Yeah. He spins past Ramadol.
I mean, he could shoot himself.
He could have scored himself, but Okazaki's in space, not going to miss. Yeah.
And taps it in the empty
net.
Do
you know what the Honda said after the game about his, you know, he's setting up Okazaki's third goal? He was saying that at that moment, he thought, I'm not really a striker. Because in his mind, if he was a real striker, he went for the goal by himself after beating two defenders. Mm. But he chose to pass it to his
He prefers an assist. He said, I've got a goal.
I can't be a striker.
I don't want to show off.
But he was actually registered as a midfielder in the tournament.
Right.
So this tournament was the first time he led the line as a lone centre forward.
Yeah, I mean, it was Japan's second World Cup victory outside of Japan, of course, as you mentioned earlier, and they're second against a European side. So it was a huge win, and those kind of results. I mean, for us back in old England, you know, you look at that and you think, well, that's maybe slightly surprising, but you don't realise what that kind of result means to a country who didn't have a lot of history in the World Cup, of course, and it was a fairly rare win. But to score three goals in a World Cup, imagine if England scored three goals in any game, I'm quite delighted to be.
Well, I think comfortably the highest scoring game in Rustenburg.
Yeah. It wasn't a good
That goal. Was an awful World Cup. Yeah. I'm sorry. Just, and Rustenburg was such a miserable town. But I don't know why England decided to base themselves there as well.
Because Capello loves misery, doesn't he? Yeah. Let's be honest.
But it was... The town basically had two streets. It was a very small place. And there was these... I think it was four enormous shops selling gravestones. And a couple of people, you know, in the first sort of week of the tournament, sort of wrote diary columns making jokes about these tombstones and whatever. And I sort of like, I don't know, I'm not sure we should be making jokes about tombstones. And then I sort of did some research into why. And it's because the juvenile death rate from HIV is so high that sort of, you know, to give meaning or, you know, some sense of importance to a, you know, lives ended horrifically young, you buy a massive tombstone. You kind of really invest in that to sort of try and sort of compensate for the early loss of life. You sort of think, God, what a bleak, awful place.
Yeah, I mean, that is quite heavy, isn't it?
And in terms of sort of just somewhere to go out, you had to go to the shopping centre out of town.
That's it.
And if you didn't have a car, like, I don't know how, I mean, I didn't have a car, so I had to, and I can't drive. So I had to kind of get lifts out of the shopping centre to eat in one of the two half-decent restaurants. Yeah. It was a really miserable place.
But, I mean,
and the football there, this game aside, and then Ghana beat the US there in the 2-1. Last 16. Though, I mean, those are the only two half-decent games.
Yeah. But, I mean, the 2010 World Cup, it was a funny old one, but it was only the backdrop of the first World Cup in Africa that was its saving grace, really, because the football wasn't great.
Yeah.
You know, but of course, from a Japanese point of view, this game was rather enjoyable.
Well, I can't say football is really great, but you know.
Well, the game against Paraguay, can I suggest, was one of the worst games of football ever played.
Really? How about the first game in Cameroon? Because I remember.
Hang on. This is the same tournament England drew 0-0 with Algeria. That one takes a biscuit.
Well, okay. I mean,
at least you had a penalty shootout in that one.
Yeah. Do you remember that we played against England in one of our four preparation games? I think we played England.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
In Austria.
1-1?
And in four games, no. 2-1 England, 1-2-1. But in four games, we conceded 9 and scored only 1. That one goal came from England game.
Yeah.
We're very charitable. Yeah. But going into that game against Denmark, they'd lost 5 out of 6, I think, Japan. So it wasn't. So to get to the knockout stage of a World Cup was huge for Japan.
It's a huge thing, yeah.
It really was. And Paraguay, who were only narrowly beaten by Spain, although everybody was narrowly beaten by Spain, who would go on to win the tournament, of course, with all those 1-0s. But they lost 5-3 on penalties.
Yeah.
But I mean,
there was a decent Paraguay side.
It was a decent Paraguay side.
They were not good to watch, but it was Tata Martino was the manager.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And they got to the
quarters.
They got the final of the Copa America in 2011.
Oh, with Uruguay beaten them.
And were beaten by Uruguay.
But didn't they get there without winning a game? Was that them?
That was a Tata Martino world. Didn't work so well with Barcelona.
I was about to say, how did he get the Barcelona job? But there we are. It's strange. But the Japan manager, you know, they were very defensive, obviously, by the nature of 0-0 against Paraguay. And I understand Paraguay, a very dogged opponent. But Takeshi Okada said after the Denmark game, "I did not want to concentrate only on defence. I told them to summon all their courage to be aggressive." Why didn't he take that approach against Paraguay? Or perhaps he didn't. Were they snuffed out?
Well, I think it's just a peer pressure for being in the knockout stage. Yeah. Because against Denmark, you know, I think, you know, we could, even the draw would do, but that sort of like a gave us a courage that need to go forward, you know, go on attacking. And while the Asian qualifiers, and Okada tried to play more attacking football, but once the tournament started, he just became made aware of the reality so that we can't really, you know, go all attacking. So you have to be solid. Yeah.
But so something that fascinated me, and I don't know how to read this, but I think it was 2008, maybe 2009. I went to Japan and I went to the National Football Museum in Tokyo,
yeah.
And they have this sort of, back then they had this sort of video. It's a 20-minute program, and I think it was about qualifying for the 2006 World Cup, but the tone of it was really, really weird, and. You know, in my head, going there, Japan are the Asian superpower. They've won 3 Asian Cups in a row. Yeah. Of course they should qualify.
But then look at Egypt in Africa.
Well, that's true. Yes. Yeah, but the tone of this video was very much our plucky lads. You're going to I don't know, Tajikistan or wherever, and they came away with a 2-1 win. The heroes. And I was watching, thinking, like, is this video just sort of made for kids who are used to sort of the Captain Tsubasa storyline of it's always got to be the underdog.
Mm-hmm.
Or is this actually kind of how football is seen in Japan, that there's sort of this sense of inferiority, which is completely unjustified, certainly on history post mid-90s?
Yeah. But I think back then, we are still viewed as, pretty much an underdog, I think. Yeah. I mean, even when the grouping were made, and one of the Japanese papers that carry out the opinion poll done in Denmark, and at the time 80% of the Danish people who responded to the poll said that they would qualify, their team would qualify, and the naming the Japan as the bottom of the group, and that's what we saw as well.
It's so fascinating. So after that, Japan, how was the team received then? Because presumably on the basis of that Denmark game, people were quite proud of what
they
achieved.
I think we are quite positive. Yeah, mm-hmm. And we can't say really, you know, cheerful because, as you said, you know, that the manner we lost in against Paraguay was quite grim. Yeah.
But still, only narrowly
a draw, though.
I mean, yeah, narrowly edged out, and penalties.
So there's a lot of teams have claimed that a penalty shootout defeat isn't really a defeat at all.
Indeed, they have. So, but this game was crucial for Japan in that they did. They feel like, hang on a minute, we belong on the world stage. You know, we belong at the World Cup now.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, not totally belong, but as I said at the beginning, that
but not completely out of place because
not out of place
because I think you know you go back to say 98.
Yeah, we could compete. Yeah,
exactly. You go back to was it 98 was their first one? You know, and it was kind of like sometimes when you view certain sides when they turn up, you think, well, you should get 3 points there. Mm. Whereas now I think people think, oh, Japan. Yeah, they're a dangerous side. That you know, it wouldn't be shocking to see Japan in the second round of a World Cup.
Well, there's also, I mean, there's a whole load of stuff's changed there. So, I mean, as British people, our understanding of Japanese football in the 90s was the J League, to where Gary Lineker and other old players go to finish their careers.
Yeah.
Whereas now we know Japanese players like Nakamura, like Honda.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're aware of players of that stature and. It's a much more mainstream football nation.
Yeah. And going to this tournament, we only had among the starting 11, which was the same all through the tournament for us, there are only 3 players who were playing abroad at the time. Then after this tournament, another 3 or 4 went abroad. Now it's quite normal for us to have the players in the national team who's been playing, you know, abroad.
Yeah, and is this game in Japan seen as like a turning point?
Yeah, I think it's a turning point. In terms of the we can say goodbye to the frantic defending for 90 minutes, and we can be more tactical. And also, because we confirmed that we can say that we have a solid enough base to compete in the international stage, so we can move on to the next step, try to win the game, actually.
Yeah.
Why didn't you think of the last World Cup and how close they came to beating Belgium?
Yeah.
Who beat Brazil, you know, so...
That sort of positive change, I think it was only possible. We've been heading towards gradually that way, but I think this Denmark game and the performance and the win gave us confidence, actually, to move on, to go for the next stage.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, it's been fascinating unpacking it with you, Shin. A pleasure to have you on the podcast. No, not at all. Thank you. Thank you, Jonathan, as always. For more stories like that, do check out theblizzard.co.uk, of course. But thank you very much for tuning in. That was the Greatest Games podcast on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard. Come back next week for another great game from the history of football. See you then.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.